listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos, Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents Open Hearted, the sermon by the Reverend Gene Randall Bodman, presented on Sunday, September 23rd, 2018.
Once upon a time, when my children were young enough to play in the yard together after school and before dinner, I was happily puttering about the kitchen, listening to NPR. It was a fall day, which meant the boys were in the front yard, where I could neither see them nor hear them. And I was very happily, busily, making something satisfyingly easy, but warm and comforting. When one of the boys came pelting breathlessly in, speeding around the corner and grabbing onto the kitchen counter to break his speed, "Mom, Caleb hit me." "Uh-huh. What happened just before Caleb hit you?" "Okay, yeah. Never mind. But he still hit me." "Uh-huh. Dinner in 10. Don't forget to wash your hands." I imagine it was a bit like that for Jesus when he was traveling with the 12. Not the hitting and the appealing to mom, but asking a question to which he already more or less knew the answer. It went like this. After a good day of exorcism, Jesus had repeated this bombshell to his 12 closest followers. "My ministry, my life, is coming to an end. There will be betrayal, terror, and death. But then there will be life and hope." This seems like pretty essential information. Confusing, but essential. Nevertheless, as they continued on their journey, was that what the 12 were talking about? No. They wanted to know who was going to get the promotion. They were arguing about which one of them was the greatest of all. Imagine that day in Capernaum. Hot day, maybe. Jesus' disciples clearly in some stages of grief about Jesus' future, including some pretty strong denial. They get to the house, maybe clean their feet off, and fall into the living room sofas. Now, usually, when I read stories about Jesus traveling with his friends, and there are a lot of those in Mark, I imagine him leading the way, either out in front all alone with the 12 behind him, like geese in formation, or maybe among the first little cluster, turning around occasionally to make sure the whole group can hear him, pausing along the way, answering questions, maybe stopping to interact with the neighbors they passed. But Jesus firmly in the lead. Now, I'm not sure where I got this picture, maybe from my children's illustrated Bible, but reading today's story again, it sounds like maybe after Jesus dropped his bombshell, he drifted to the rear of the group and followed along and heard it all. Because by the time he got into the house, the disciples had already turned on the game, grabbed a beer, and were updating their Facebook pages. Hashtag inner circle. I'm the great one. Then Jesus enters, grabs the remote, and says, So, guys, what were you talking about back there? Silence. Now, clearly, he knew what they'd been talking about. Because next, he sat down, called them all together, and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Perhaps he said it after coming in the door, last of all. Maybe the 12 were ashamed that they had rushed ahead. Maybe they were ashamed that along the way, they were too afraid to ask Jesus about that central teaching about his death. They had been busy trying to drown out their own sorrow and confusion about what was about to happen, by engaging in a loud debate about which one of them was the greatest. They remind me a little bit of graduate students I have known, well, and a graduate student I once was, and also undergraduates that I have taught, pretending to know more than they did so they wouldn't be caught looking foolish, then loudly posturing to prove that they were good enough, smart enough to be there, to be part of that coveted inner circle, the people on the inside and in the know. So busy proving themselves that they couldn't listen. So Jesus goes a step further and illustrates what he means by the first must be last by putting a little child in their midst. Then he pulled that small boy or girl into his arms and said, "Whoever welcomes one such child welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes even the very Holy One." Now, to our 21st century ears, that probably sounds a little bit like, well, a Hallmark card. A little sentimental, but not untrue. That feels right to us. A little bit obvious, maybe even. Children are so lovely. I remember one of the cards I received after my oldest son was born. I saved it for years, and it said, "It is no small thing when those who are so fresh from God love us." It meant a lot to me, and that's how we see children. As a culture, we have a high regard for children's value, for their innocent wisdom, and the infinite worth of each one. Our children are precious to us. And in some circles, they drive family life in modern America. You can see it by the way families prioritize their time and their spending and their energy all around their children. Our world is a world away from how children were perceived in the ancient world. In that world, a face-to-face culture based on shame and honor, there were no categories by which to measure the worth of a child. Children were of no account. Now, that is not to say that their parents did not love them. Of course they did. And their parents educated them to adulthood. But children had no rights. They had no influence. They had no standing. The family was not built around the needs of the child. They were utterly dependent, utterly vulnerable, and utterly powerless. And this is exactly Jesus's point. Welcome, he says, the dependent, the vulnerable, and the powerless. And when you do, you welcome me. In Mark's gospel, discipleship is defined not by believing, as it is, say, in John's gospel, not by being a good student, as it is in Matthew's gospel. In Mark, a disciple is simply one who follows. Jesus says it to them over and over again, "Follow me." He doesn't spend a lot of time explaining himself. He just says, "Follow me," and then describes a journey through vulnerability to life and hope. And when Jesus says, "If you want to be great, be last of all and servant of all," he is not just calling us to humility. He's not just asking us to give up our pride. He is calling us to renunciation of dominance. Jesus calls us to count ourselves among the vulnerable. It's more than just saying, "Well, maybe I'm not so important after all." It's actually a call to put ourselves among the vulnerable and to take on their vulnerability. He calls us to renounce dominance, to renounce our desire to climb the ladder, so to speak. It sounds like the easiest thing in the world to welcome a child, but I wonder, which child are we eager to welcome? Whose child? Do we welcome a disruptive child? One whose development is different and whose behavior doesn't seem to match his physical size? One whose language and speech ability doesn't seem to match her age? What about a grubby child? One who hasn't had a bath? What about a rude child? One who speaks out of turn and does not know how to use the right words in the right tone to express their needs? What about a child who doesn't speak any English? Or a child whose parents are undocumented? How about the child whose family has been evicted over and over again, who cannot focus because they're not sure where they will sleep that night or the next night? And what about the parents of all those vulnerable children? Sometimes demanding, unlovely, ungrateful, just like the rest of us. Do we want to welcome them? I ask those questions of all of us, myself included, not to make us feel guilty, but to remind us that what was hard for the disciples to hear is hard for us to hear, and it's hard to live. But Jesus says it is a call to life. We are at a cultural crossroads when all kinds of power relationships are being questioned. When we are being pressed to acknowledge that many of us, most of us, were raised in ways we don't really disagree with anymore. Maybe we were raised to think that straight was normal, and every other orientation must be defined against that and orbit around it. Maybe we were raised to think that white was regular, and every other race should be defined by degrees of not whiteness and should orbit around whiteness. Maybe it was that male was standard and non-males existed in the spaces that males did not take up. And still, we think of America as the center of the universe, that the needs of our country are more important than the needs of any other. Long before Black Lives Matter and the Me Too movement and the work of organizations like Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice, Jesus said to his disciples, "Follow me. Renounce your claim to dominance." When you welcome one of these vulnerable ones, one of the ones who can do you no earthly good, you welcome me. And when you welcome me, you welcome the very holiest one.
Listen, listen, listen.